You're listening to Midori House, first broadcast from the House of Switzerland on the 9th of August 2012 on Monocle 24. Midori House is brought to you in association with Thailand.
Guten Tag und Willkommen, bonjour et bienvenue to a special Olympics edition of Midori House, today broadcasting live from House of Switzerland in the shadow of Southwark Cathedral with me, Steve Bloomfield, and Andrew Tuck.
In our penultimate Olympic show, we'll be joined by a host of Swiss guests, kicking off with the country's ambassador to London, Anton Thalmann.
We'll also be discussing Switzerland's Olympics performance so far with two of the country's top sports journalists. They've got just three medals, but has Team Suisse met expectations?
No Midori House Olympic special would be complete without a culinary tour. Chef Philip Mosserman will be here to talk Swiss food.
And don't worry, it won't just be fondue. As if that's not enough, we'll also play a couple of Swiss tunes too. That's all coming up in the next 60 minutes here on Midori House, broadcasting live from House of Switzerland.
But first, let's cross back to the studio at Midori House for the news headlines with Jonathan Wheatley.
Thousands of people from across Ghana have converged around the State House in the capital Accra, where their late president John Atta Mills lies in state. Retired civil servant Alex Kwesi Appiah said the turnout was incredible.
People have come all the way from the north, south, east of the country. And the long queue is to happen, it's expected. It's all the way to a stadium and we can't help it. Everyone wants to see his late president.
The world could face a food crisis, the United Nations Food Agency has warned today after reporting a surge in global food prices last month. Concern about extreme hot and dry conditions in the United States Midwest sent corn and soybean prices to record highs, driving overall food prices higher again and reversing the Food and Agriculture Organization's forecast for declines this year. Staying with extreme weather of a different kind, as the United Nations has provided emergency rations to tens of thousands in North Korea after torrential rain and flooding there as a result of a typhoon which has caused damage in other parts of the Far East. 70% of the capital of the Philippines, Manila, is underwater. From the World Food Programme, Claudia von Rohl in Beijing detailed the aid delivered to North Korea.
Immediately after the field visit and after having assessed the damage, the World Food Programme has activated emergency response and has delivered 336 metric tons of maize to about 60,000 people in 16 counties that have been the most affected ones. The food rations the people will get consist of 400 grams of maize per day for 2 weeks.
Authorities in Belarus have arrested and fined two journalists for posing for photographs holding teddy bears after hundreds were dropped by air on the country in a pro-democracy stunt. Alexander Lukashenko, the authoritarian president, also suggested today that the Swedish embassy in Minsk had been involved in planning the 4th of July escapade. In an outburst likely to widen a diplomatic rift with Sweden over the incident, both Belarus and Sweden have pulled all their diplomats out of each other's country, worsening Belarus's already poor relations with the West. Olympic news now, and on the 13th day of the event here in London, the host nation Great Britain has won two more gold medals. Nicola Adams won gold in the flyweight women's boxing, and Charlotte Dujardin won a gold medal for the individual dressage, enabling the host nation to stay in third place with 24 gold medals. China still leads with 36 gold medals, and the United States is second with 35 gold medals. And finally, the fund to save Venice is literally in danger of sinking. The Venice in Peril Fund, which has raised more than £10 million for the city since it was founded in Belgravia here in London more than 40 years ago, is itself facing extinction. The chairman, the director and half the trustees have resigned or retired, with the fund finding it difficult to raise money in a recession. The fund has so far saved over 40 monuments in Venice, including two churches. And those are the stories at the top of the hour here on Monocle 24.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Jonathan, and welcome back to this special edition of Midori House, coming to you live from House of Switzerland on the banks of the River Thames. We're right in the shadow of Southwark Cathedral, and Andrew, we seem to have some musical accompaniment as well, right behind us.
I think there's going to be quite a lot of noise, actually, during this. There's a man trying to remove a wheelie bin, which wasn't helping earlier on. There was a plane going overhead, and now there's a band limbering up as well.
And there's also a wonderful climbing wall as well, which is supposed to give you a sense of what it's like to climb the north face of the Eiger. It's not quite as serious as that, but there's a little bit of sort of yelling and screaming behind us.
I was going to say, if you hear someone screaming, it's got nothing to do with us. We're not torturing any guests. That's literally someone stumbling on the wall.
Indeed. It's a lovely setting, though, as all these places have been. And we enjoyed a bit of Bratwurst earlier while watching
Well, you did.
Well, I did, yes. Yeah. It was a very nice Bratwurst. And we watched some of the synchronised swimming, which was playing on Swiss TV on a massive screen out there. It was a lot of good fun.
We watched the Egyptians doing their synchronised swimming, which I was saying, I'm surprised that actually during the depths of the revolution that there was time to kind of go off and practice your synchronised swimming, which was encouraging, I think.
It was. The other thing I liked about synchronised swimming is the way that at the end, when you come out and you wait your score, you all have to line up with these wonderful sort of smiles on your face, and then you see your score, and even if it's terrible, like the one for Canada was put them not in a medal position, you have to keep that fixed grin.
I've had that face a few times at work as well, so I wouldn't worry about that.
So we've got quite a good show lined up, haven't we, over the next 50-odd minutes?
Yes, we haven't. We've already got our guests beginning to line up, and it's 6:06 minutes past the hour, and you're listening to Monocle 24.
You're listening to Monocle 24, live from the House of Switzerland. Sie hören Monocle 24, direkt vom House of Switzerland.
There we are, direct from House of Switzerland. The Olympics are a busy time for diplomats. As we've been hearing over the last couple of weeks, the international gathering of VIPs, high-profile business leaders and politicians here in London has offered an excellent opportunity for some soft power diplomacy that would normally perhaps take months of negotiations to arrange.
So what diplomatic opportunities have the London 2012 Games offered the Swiss Embassy this summer? And how successfully has the nation been able to promote itself to the rest of the world over the last fortnight? Anton Thalmann is Switzerland's ambassador to the United Kingdom, and I'm delighted to say that he's taken some time out from his hectic schedule to join us here at the House of Switzerland. Ambassador, can you just tell me, first of all, how important is this 2 weeks for you as an ambassador? What kinds of things do you try and achieve while the Games have been on here in London?
Well, I'd say it's a general opportunity to practice public diplomacy, to sell one's country to the public of the host nation, and that is an opportunity which you cannot refuse, and it's a rare one in its magnitude and depth and possibilities of coming across. So I would say that's the main interest, and we didn't have any crisis to deal with during that time. We had settled our tax agreement with the Brits long before, so there were no acute problems to deal with on the sidelines of the Olympics.
That you do worry about, though, when these sorts of events happen, be they World Cups or Olympics, that, oh God, we're gonna have to talk to the Danes when we're there, and actually there's still that issue with the Danes we need to sort out. Do those sorts of things come up?
You mean direct competition between...
Or problems that you might have between different countries, which, you know, perhaps these offer an opportunity to sort out in a non-combative way.
Well, I'd say reception at the Buckingham Palace was a good opportunity for our president. Then our foreign minister had a few occasions when he met colleagues. So these gatherings are generally useful for that. Also to build your network, because usually when you're not in office since a long time, you profit out of proportion if you meet so many of your colleagues at the same time. And I think the opening ceremony was also one of those occasions when they all had to sit together without aids. And so there was nobody to block direct communication, no unwelcome translators from the diplomatic world. And they were exposed directly to each other, and that was quite appreciated.
And can I ask you, we're here at the House of Switzerland, and one of the things that this is attempting to do is to get over a kind of more nuanced picture, in a way, of Switzerland. We talked earlier, before we came on air, that you're trying to put an emphasis here on the contemporary technology that Switzerland's involved with, and trying to get it beyond the most simple stereotypes, although, of course, you're using those to your advantage here and there as well. What would you like to see the House of Switzerland present as an image of contemporary Switzerland?
Well, it's not to do away with the useful and sympathetic Heidi cliches, but to just balance things a bit better and show that our present wealth is not due to Heidi and tourism, actually. Tourism does employ a lot of people, but it's not there that you have the big value added. It's in the high-tech fields, and that has to be propagated a bit too.
And how does that actually work? I mean, do you have? I mean, we're here. Obviously, we've talked about the climbing wall. There's also Lindt chocolate, which lots of people have been gobbling down. Particularly if you can see bits of chocolate around people's mouths all over the place here. These are all sort of things that we kind of know about Switzerland, though. I mean, have there been other things you've been trying to do while you're here to try and promote those other sides of Switzerland that perhaps aren't part of the stereotype?
Well, that's what we try to show mainly inside the House of Switzerland, because it depends on electronics and all these games, for example. You can go try it out, but it's not good if it rains on them, so you have to keep them inside.
To the sport, has obviously we all know Roger Federer, and he had a fantastic tournament up to the very end until he was beaten by Britain's Andy Murray. But aside from Roger Federer, summer Olympics aren't necessarily always Switzerland's strong point. The Winter Games, you tend to win more medals. Who are the people that we should have been keeping an eye on over the past couple of weeks that would have really given us a better sense of what Switzerland's like?
Well, I think we put on a good show in jumping yesterday, because that is not something the general public knows about a lot here. They think that the horses are, especially in England, and that other people have trouble keeping up in the show jumping. But we do have our own tradition in that field, and it's nice to be able to come across as such.
And have you been watching much of the games? Did you get a chance to go out to any of the events?
Well, yes, the tennis and the rowing in Eton, and the jumping. So
you were there actually for the gold medal, were you?
Yeah, but it's something that it's a big rush always, and you can't really say I've been able to take it all in and interpreted it profoundly. With the possibilities offered to foreign dignitaries, you can rush from one site to another in no time. You can change your mind every half hour and spend your time rushing around. And I think that way it then tends to stay a bit superficial, because you can't compare all the competing athletes, and so that's a pity, but anyway.
So I was just going to say, have you been busy actually at the embassy putting up different dignitaries coming through to see the events here in London?
Yes, very many.
That's a very diplomatic answer, I think.
Thank you very much for joining us here and for hosting us here at the House of Switzerland. You're listening to Monocle 24.
Modern Thailand is on the move. Take transport. We're building urban mass transit systems and a $15.4 billion high-speed rail link that will crisscross the country faster than ever before. We've even developed a solar-powered prototype of our famous tuk-tuks. for a greener urban journey. And if you think that sounds good, wait until you hear our homegrown teapot. To find out more, visit modern-thailand.com.
Wherever you're going this summer, and whether it's for work or play, let Monocle's editors be your travel companions. We've just refreshed and revised our team's guides to the world's top business cities and resorts, so you can have our 25-25 travel guide series in the palm of your hand with the Monocle app, available from iTunes, or download free guides from monocle.com. From São Paulo to New York, Capri to St. Bart's, we can show you where to long lunch or go for your morning run. Just head to the iTunes App Store and download the Monocle app. Monocle, keeping an eye and an ear on the world.
You're listening to Monocle 24, live from the House of Switzerland. Sie hören Monocle 24, direkt vom House of Switzerland.
This is a special edition of Midori House on Monocle 24 with me, Steve Bloomfield, and Andrew Tuck. The music you heard in the background just before was the Eve Filer Trio. I'm fairly sure they're going to be entertaining people here throughout the show, so you might pick up a little bit now and then. Now, for a country famous, among other things, for its mountain range, Switzerland, unsurprisingly, tends to do better at the Winter Olympics than the Summer Games.
Aside from a standout performance in Atlanta in 1996, when the Swiss team won four golds, Switzerland has not won more than two gold medals since London last hosted the Olympic Games in 1948.
With just 3 days of competition to go, Switzerland has managed to secure itself those two golds. But can they make it three? To help answer that question, we're joined now by two of the country's top sports journalists, Martin Born from Tages Anzeiger and Christoph Girch, sports editor of NZZ. Gentlemen, welcome to Midori House.
Hi. Thank you.
Let's start with that question, Christoph. Can you win a third gold?
I'm pretty sure that we can win a third gold on Sunday in one of the last competitions. Actually, it's the cross country race, and we do have the biggest favorite of all. He's from Switzerland, so I'm pretty sure that chances are pretty good.
And Martin, would that be seen as a big success in Switzerland to have three golds, considering what's gone previously?
It depends on how you count. We are quite champions in these countings. If we have seven bronze medals and two silver and no gold, we count the medals. And if we have two gold and one silver, we count the gold. And if we have three gold even, we will be happy. But mostly... It wasn't great what Swiss did here. We just had these medals and no one else, and that was the problem.
Martin, is there a kind of support from the Swiss for neighbouring countries as well? If you're from the German-speaking part of Switzerland, if you're sitting in Zurich, are you likely to support your German cousins across the border? Or are you supportive of what Austria does? And similarly, if you sit in Geneva, do you kind of throw your lot in with the French a little bit?
Perhaps in Geneva they might be for the French, but not in Zurich. I think we prefer to see the Germans lose than winning. It got a little bit better with the soccer team, with the football team, who played quite well in the last European Championships. But normally we prefer the Germans losing.
There are many other countries who share that view. Now, Martin mentioned that you might win three gold medals, but it's pretty much just that. You know, there's no. I mean, obviously Roger Federer getting a silver medal in the tennis, but you'd expect him to do something. Christoph, why is it that Switzerland perhaps hasn't performed as well as you might have hoped?
I'm not sure if we really have hoped for more. The thing about sports in Switzerland is that there's not really a sports system like you guys have in Great Britain these days. Sports in Switzerland depends on individual athletes and how they do individually. And you can never, 4 years before, for example, if you look forward to Rio de Janeiro in 4 years, you have no idea what's going on there because we don't have a big system behind. But I like that, actually. I have to say I like individual athletes going on their own.
And tell me, the people who have come through as successful, they're in events like the equestrian events. We don't see many track entrants from Switzerland. Is that just traditionally that track and field hasn't been so good for Switzerland, or is there no pressure for Swiss kids to go running because literally they are spending their winter skiing and their summers on the lake?
We used to have track athletes as well. We also had swimmers, for example. We had André Bucher a couple of years ago. We had Flavia Rigamonti a couple of years ago. We had Werner Günther in the 90s. It's just because we don't have so many athletes. Now we have a tennis player, we have a triathlete, we have the ones with the horses, and maybe in 4 years we have a track athlete again. But just because there's no big system behind, you never know what's coming.
We have the European Championship in Zurich, and there is a sort of program. You can't compare it with the program of the British, but there is sort of program for young athletes that they might get better. And there are already two relays for 4x100 with I think 3 or 4 black. So it's not so many black people in Swiss, but the sprinters they are. And perhaps there will be something getting a little better. There is little improvement, but not too much.
And do you find that in terms of your readers and your viewers, they're as interested in the summer games as the winter games?
Well, every 4 years they are, and every 4 years they ask for more medals. But 2 months later, if the sports system comes to the people and comes to the government and asks for more money, then it's all behind and they forgot about it again. But definitely, Winter Olympics are definitely more important, as well as skiing World Cup and all the winter sports. It's much more important in Switzerland.
And Christoph, can I just ask, what do you make of the London Olympics? Do you think they've been a success? Are they as good as the British people think they've been?
Oh, definitely. I love how the Olympics are here in London. Mostly because if you compare it to the Beijing Games, for example, you feel it everywhere that it's not for London. It's not about showing off. It's not about showing the world what they're capable of. It's more like, to me, it looks like having a good party for the Londoners and for the Britons, and that's very important. I think all the guests here, the sport, the athletes, and even the journalists, they feel that, and I think they like it as well.
What's been your verdict on the games?
The venues were incredible, and I think with its venues, they did the same thing that Brailsford did with the cyclists. They watched each detail, so. Every stadium is beautiful, it's fantastic, it's big audiences. You have a site on I don't know how many monuments. It's all these parks, they are fantastic, and they make the good mood of everyone. And what I think is great thing is the transport. It's incredible how we get from the Olympic Stadium to our hotel in half an hour without any problem.
That view is perhaps a minority view among Londoners.
No, but I think that's the extraordinary thing. I think that for Londoners, I think even many people who were sceptical of the games before they started, the city's swung behind it, and you feel it as a Londoner. You wonder if someone's put something in the water, because everyone is so smiley and so happy about the event. People have really got involved with it, and you're right. Somehow the city that shouldn't really be coping with this games. We know we don't fund our public transport like the Swiss do, for example, but somehow it's coped with this huge influx of people all heading in one direction.
But I have to say, one of the reasons is also that Britons are doing so well in competitions. I think if they wouldn't have won so many gold medals so far, then maybe the mood would be a little bit worse. I don't know. But it's possible.
Yeah, we're quite used to losing, though, as well.
It's
it's built into our DNA.
They were still crazy, even on the road race when Cavendish didn't win. This was still happening, the big feast, and they were so proud of their riders coming, having done everything for this victory, and even without winning, they were happy with them. And I think this was real spirit there. And I don't know if it would have gone on without the medals, but it was there.
It might have tested their patience eventually, you never know. In terms of how you've covered the games, I mean, how much do you focus on Swiss athletes and how much is on all the other events? You know, if, for example, there's a Swiss swimmer who's, you know, might just make the final of the other 100 metres freestyle in the pool, is that big news or are you more concerned about Michael Phelps?
Have so many successful athletes, right? We have to focus on international athletes. Also, we're from a newspaper with a very international approach. So actually we cover also the international athletes, especially compared to the London newspapers these days. I mean, it's crazy if you, even the Times, which has got an international approach, even the Times does like 19 pages about British athletes and one page about Usain Bolt, for example. That's a bit crazy, but that's how it is, I think.
Yeah, Swiss athletes is the big names, and it's also the big places to go. Let's have a look at the beach volleyball. Let's have a look at the eventing in Greenwich Park. These events were also good for us in making for a story. So we had a little bit of everything.
Martin, can I ask you about how a modern Swiss journalist works? Are you filing for your online and for the print all day? When you go to the venues, you see the journalists sitting there in the stadium. Some of them are writing like crazy, and others seem to have their feet up. I'm wondering if you're one with your feet up doing your one piece when you get back to the hotel at night, or are you blogging and doing everything?
No, it's not just one piece mostly, but it's just for the paper.
Okay.
So there are two or three or one, it depends how much it is. If you have a gold medal like yesterday, it's a little bit more. But I don't know if we are perhaps the only papers who can work like this, because it's the bigger paper, so we're quite easy.
So you're not blogging as either, or you're not having to being forced to do stuff for the digital world?
I personally do. I'm on Twitter and stuff like that, but I wouldn't have to do it.
It's your personal choice.
Yeah, I like it because you get a feeling of the athletes. That's why I'm on Twitter. Yeah, but we don't have to do it at all.
Okay, Martin Born and Christoph Giersch, thank you both very much for joining us. You're listening to Midori House,
and we're going to be handing back over to Monocle HQ in a moment for a roundup of the headlines from around the world. But first, let's keep things Swiss. This is Who You Are by Heidi Happy and Zwicker.
Who You Are, a collaboration between Swiss folk songstress Heidi Happy and veteran producer Zwicker.
You're listening to Midori House here on Monocle 24, where in the next half hour we'll be exploring the non-sporting side of the Swiss Olympic Committee, enjoying a bit of Swiss food and stepping inside an old postal bus that's been turned into a pop-up radio station.
I'm definitely looking forward to the Swiss food. We've just sent Adrian Craddock out to find some raclette. But first, we're going to head back to the studio for the latest news headlines with Jonathan.
Thanks very much. Thousands of people from across Ghana have converged around the State House in the capital Accra, where their late President John Atta Mills lies in state. The country will be remaining in mourning for three more days. The world could face a food crisis, the United Nations Food Agency has warned today, after reporting a surge in global food prices last month. Concern about extreme hot and dry conditions in the United States Midwest sent corn and soybean prices to record highs last month, driving overall food prices higher again. Staying with extreme weather of a different kind, as the United Nations has provided emergency rations to tens of thousands in North Korea after torrential rain and flooding there as a result of a typhoon which has also caused damage in other parts of the Far East. 70% of the capital of the Philippines, Manila, is still underwater. Authorities in Belarus have arrested and fined two journalists for posing for photographs holding teddy bears after hundreds were dropped by air on the country in a pro-democracy stunt which Belarus blames on Sweden. Both Both countries have pulled all their diplomats out of each other's countries, worsening Belarus's already poor relations with the West. And some sports news now, and in the Olympics, on the 13th day of the event here in London, the host nation Great Britain has won two more gold medals. Nicola Adams won gold in the flyweight women's boxing, and Charlotte Dujardin has won a gold medal for the individual dressage, enabling the host nation to stay in third place with 24 gold medals. China still leads with 36 gold medals, and the United States is catching up in second place with 35. And those are the stories here on Monocle 24.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. You're listening to a special edition of Midori House with me, Steve Bloomfield, and Andrew Tuck. We're at London Bridge on the south bank of the River Thames, in the shadow of the Shard and the shadow of Southwark Cathedral, almost, in fact, quite literally now in the shadow of Southwark Cathedral. And we're all feeling a little bit Swiss because we're here at the House of Switzerland.
It's a space that's been set up for athletes and their families, diplomats, VIPs, and the public to come and celebrate the Swiss team's successes. And given that their medal count hasn't exactly been enormous, the venue and other entertainments offered here are also an excellent opportunity to promote Swiss brands and Swiss culture to the people who come to visit.
That band you can hear in the background, possibly, is the Eve Thyler Trio. They're playing all throughout the show, mainly for your benefit, but also for the people here as well. And we're also going to be joined now by Ole Rauch, who's part of the management team of the Swiss Olympic Committee, who's helped plan this space a little bit, has also been deeply involved in the logistics and the marketing of the Swiss Olympic team. Ole, thank you for coming to Midori House.
Welcome.
Well, yeah, yes, you should. Yeah, you're welcoming us, indeed. Tell us a little bit about the setup for the Swiss team coming here. I mean, how long does it take? When do you start planning everything for the visit to London?
Actually, we start right after the Winter Olympics in 2010, Vancouver. I think already first visits here in London have took place already before Vancouver Olympics, and right after that, after 2010, we started to visit regularly here in London together with other partners to set up here the House of Switzerland, but also to set up or to check out the different locations of venues, but also housing for our team, because not the whole team lives in the Olympic Village. They are on several places, so we really already 2 years ago we came to London first and checked out.
How big is the team that you bring over? Obviously there's the sports people, but how many other people have you actually brought here?
Well, we have 104 athletes, and there's an official 0.55 functioners, officials for an athlete.
So
it is. Otherwise, you know, the Olympics would just been too big. If every nation would bring, you know,
too many bureaucrats,
too many, but also trainers and physiotherapists and everything. So we are about 150 official delegation members. And then besides that, we don't have a lot of more people came here. So let's say about 20 more who are not officially accredited by the IOC.
Now, obviously, Switzerland is known as a multilingual country with a French part, a German part. Does that divide down to the sporting committees? You know, obviously, you have a national committee for sport, but are some sports actually more on the French side of the country? Some sports more on the German side? Are there rivalries between those two sides of the country you see played out here? You're smiling. I think that's a big yes. So.
Yeah. Well, there are. There is a kind of a rivalry inside Switzerland, mainly between the German and the French speaking part, but then we have also, you know, an Italian speaking part, and don't forget the Romanche, which is our chef de mission He's actually from he speaks Romansh, so but he's the only one actually. We have one more mountain biker. He comes from that part, but there is a kind of a nice rivals between the French and the German speaking part. There are some sports as well who are more common or more liked in different parts, like basketball. Like all our good basketball teams in Switzerland, they mainly come from the French-speaking or Italian-speaking part. But we're not as good to play here at the Olympics.
And what about the Romansh speakers? What's their sport?
Skiing. You know, we're definitely more into winter sports. I mean, Summer Olympics are great, you know, and they're bigger than the Winter Olympics. But for Switzerland, Winter Olympics are much more important. There we try to be in the top eight of the medal list. And for Summer Olympics, the target is around in the first 24. You know, so.
And you won't quite make the top 24 this time?
We still can make it, but it will be hard, difficult. Actually, we thought about you compared to Beijing, that would have meant or will mean that you need around eight to ten medals to be in the first 24. Right now, I think we're around 30th place with three medals, but we still got some chances. So maybe at the end, we still gonna make it.
And you say, you know, you started planning for London as soon as Vancouver finished. When you pack up here, does your mind turn to Sochi straight away?
Well, actually, we have been, or a couple of our staff has already been in Sochi, and we start planning that earlier because, you know, the time between Summer Olympics and the next Winter Olympics is always shorter than the other way around, you know. So after London, it only takes about 18 months till the Winter Olympics starts. So we're quite in a hurry afterwards. And after Sochi, it will take around 28 months till the next Summer Olympics. So you're always in a hurry after the Summer Olympics to really get organized the Winter Olympics.
Can I guess you're looking forward slightly more to the Rio Olympics than the Sochi Olympics?
Well, yes, we are, you know. As I said before, it is really Winter Olympics are more important for Switzerland because we're better skiers than, you know, athletes or athletics, you know. So, but every Olympics are, you know, different. There were quite a few problems or, you know, challenges to organize Beijing. You know, the Chinese mentality, and that was hard, and we all thought, oh, it's going to be a lot easier with London. But also, you know, things are different here as well as in Switzerland, so it's always a challenge, and the Russian, there will be quite a few challenges as well.
Well, good luck with that, and I'm sure you'll enjoy Rio when you get there as well. Ole Rauch, thank you very much for joining us here on Midori House.
It's 6:40 here in London, and my stomach is beginning to rumble, which can only mean one thing. Swiss food up next.
At one of the world's busiest seaports, Laem Chabang, it's easy to see why Thailand is such a dynamic trading hub. With our entrepreneurial, multi-skilled workforce, we're busy making sure vital goods get to market on time, every time. It's this hands-on approach that's made us the globe's fifth largest container shipping nation. But it's not only goods we're exporting. Our pop music is a big hit too. To find out more, visit modern-thailand.com.
On the latest episode of Section D, we visit the Philippines to hear how local craft is making big business in Europe. we drop in on the Istanbul Collectors Club, where 100 members collect everything from apple peelers to diving suits. And over in New York, we visit the studio of architect Morris Adjmi to hear about the objects that inspire him.
I mean, I love the city and I love the anonymous buildings. And so I think that that's where I draw most of my influence from.
That's Section D with Hugo MacDonald, premiering every Tuesday at 1900 hours UK time, right here on Monocle 24.
You're listening to Monocle 24, live from the House of Switzerland. Sie hören Monocle 24, direkt vom House of Switzerland.
Back with Midori House. I must say, that is, of all the little jingles we've recorded live this week from the different houses, that one is definitely my favourite, Andrew. We are back with the House of Switzerland, with Midori House at the House of Switzerland, rather. When you think about Swiss culinary heritage, you're more likely to have a strong image in your mind. Cheese and chocolate, although hopefully not together.
But Swiss food is about so much more than just that. One man who's an expert on the topic is Philip Mosserman, son of world-renowned chef Anton Mosserman. The team are catering partners of the House of Switzerland, and I'm delighted to say that Philip has joined us here now on Midori House. Welcome.
Thank you. Welcome.
Now, let's first of all just test your Swiss credentials. What's your family's heritage, and how come you ended up in London?
Very good question, by mistake somehow. my father's from Bern. And my mother comes from the eastern part in St. Gallen, and I was actually born in Switzerland. I moved over when I was 6 months old. My parents sort of packed me in the back of the Beetle that they had when they drove over with their two suitcases and me in the middle of it, and then headed off to the Dorchester to cook at that time.
Now, in the UK, your father became, you know, a big celebrity, a star chef. Does the Mosserman name also carry that weight back in Switzerland? Is there a Mosserman empire spreading from Bern and beyond?
Well, with regards to actual restaurants or catering facilities, no. But the name has become extremely well known in Switzerland. He's a bit of a hero, I have to say. It's sometimes embarrassing when we even go into the baker's to get some bread, and all of a sudden you have a queue of people wanting his autograph, and so he can never actually buy anything. Has to get somebody else to do it for him, because he's very well liked. Right?
Now, you're doing the catering here. How are you trying to present Switzerland? We were talking earlier on, you that there are all these set cliches about Switzerland, but everybody's interested in tweaking their national brand a bit. I'm sure that you don't want to just be making the same dishes again and again and again. How are you trying to present contemporary Switzerland, and what does it mean for you in food?
That's a very, very good question, actually. We've done a lot of work, a lot of research into it. For us, it was important, nevertheless, to not forget one's cultural heritage and make sure that there are those classic dishes, I'd say, done well, extremely well, that the Swiss can find themselves in again. As also, I'd say, the locals, those who are here now during the games, and the British actually find that they're used to, and then we bring them on to the next level, which is really a sort of more refined brasserie food that we've done. So we've taken some items as we've presented today for you. We have a smoked Scottish smoked salmon trout mousse. A trout is very well known and famous in Switzerland because we're landlocked, so we don't have the pleasure of having seafood, but they do eat trout, so that's a very good example. We've done it our style with some cucumber carpaccio, white balsamico dressing, and cherry tomatoes with fresh herbs. That is, I'd say, a bit more refined where we've tweaked it. Then we have a steak tartare, for example. That is actually, the Swiss love it. And especially at the restaurant, it works extremely well. It's been on the menu. It's one of our signature dishes. We've tweaked it a bit. It has a special Mosserman's recipe in it. And it's as well extremely popular in London. So we tried to create that bridge as well at the same time. And then, of course, we have a Swiss chocolate delice, but it's actually very fine, 70% cacao. It's actually lighter. It's also the cake that is presented as the medal for the medal ceremonies, celebrations that we hold here at the House of Switzerland after. So, for example, Roger Federer received it, Nicole Spierig, and today Steve Kubere.
And when we, I mean, the food looks incredible in front of us here. I mean, have you had like a real opportunity during these games to, as you say, you know, to tweak that image and sort of bring it to a broader audience of people that perhaps wouldn't have necessarily had sort of much of an opinion of Swiss food, much of a refined opinion about Swiss food?
Definitely. I think the aspect that us being here and really just catering, doing some typical Swiss dishes, but as you mentioned, there's some bridges as well with regards to prawn cocktail, for example, although it is a bit of seafood. It is something that the Swiss adore. So again, they can find themselves in it. So it's very much a Swiss brasserie food that we've done in the Athletes Brasserie, that we call it. And in the Bernese Chalet, we focused on some typical Bernese dishes with some Swiss classics such as raclette, such as fondue as well, that everybody loves. Not forgetting also the takeaway outside where we have a Bratwurst and beer, and that's pretty typical.
We've made good use of your Bratwurst and beer earlier. Well, not the beer, not yet anyway, that's after the show. No, we've talked a little bit already on this programme about Switzerland's sort of heritage and cultural history and the fact you've got three, four different languages. I mean, if you were to put Swiss cuisine in a certain bracket, would you say it's a third Italian, a third German, a third French, or is it more sort of one than the other?
I think just purely from the aspect of that the majority, in terms of people speaking the Swiss German language, naturally I think there's a Swiss German food influence that's quite great. But nevertheless, you find the most Michelin-starred restaurants in the French part. But the Italian part, food is also in the grottos, some very rustic, very refined food that people absolutely, absolutely adore.
That was the sound of me trying to get a piece of chocolate cake from plate to mouth without hitting
a very interesting conversation.
I took my opportunity.
Andrew's just like,
what can
sod
I
that.
Say?
Pick up a fork and dive in. Andrew, what are you eating? Tell us about that.
I'm having the winning cake. I think if Roger Federer ate this cake, you have to eat it post-match, don't you?
Absolutely, absolutely. No, it's
well. Unless he had a slice before it, and that's the reason he finally lost to Andy Murray. Now, just tell me, we were talking about the French-German thing there. When you're doing a catering event for this, and you know, Switzerland is careful about how it looks after all the parts of the country, do you feel a kind of a need to make sure there is a good German restaurant, a menu rather, in there, a good dish or two that's from that part of the country? Or do you think, hell to it, we're going to do all French stuff?
No, I'm being a what they call in Swiss German an Auslandschweizer, so living abroad. Actually, I've worked in all the four areas, lived in them, and I feel truly very, you know, proud that one should represent every single area. We've had the menus actually translated in the four different languages, so you'll always find English, and then, for example, German, and then you'll find English, and then Italian, English, French, and then English Romansh. So, not forgetting Romansh, 100,000 people speak it, and it's a vital part of the cultural heritage.
The cake is amazing, by the way.
It is.
Now,
it is.
One of the things that always strikes me about Swiss food is you know, this idea of the provenance of things, where you know people are very keen that you know to know which valley the cheese came from, and you know which side of the valley the cheese came from. When you've come to London, you've started using, as you say, you know, Scottish salmon. Is that difficult for some Swiss people? Are they a bit, oh, that's not from my lake?
Well, we have actually imported many of the produce. For example, we have the meringue. Meringue's actually invented in Switzerland, in a town called Meringue, and the best for all the Swiss, and there are coachloads. They do nothing but meringue. Is from Kemmery Borden. There's a beautiful little baking shop there, and that's all they do. They bake up to 5,000 a day, and it's unbelievable. We've imported 3,000 of those. We've imported a sausage from St. Gallen. It's probably the most famous Swiss sausage. So, if you know, for the St. Gallen, it's holy in terms of sausage. So, quality, we've really taken a very keen focus on Swiss produce that we've brought over.
Philip Mossman, thank you very much for joining us, and particularly for bringing the food, which I think we're going to just keep here for the rest of the show, if that's all right.
No
but
problem.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.
Yes, we have an amazing spread that's been left for us. You're listening to a special edition of Midori House here on Monocle 24.
The Olympics on Monocle 24.
As Olimpíadas estão chegando a Monocle 24. Olympiiskite igrissä po Monaco 24.
Lontoosta maailmalle Monaco 24.
Elä laavalla olympiä tähti elä Monaco arva washin.
Die Olympischen Spiele auf Monaco 24.
Shouting Olympique zai Monaco 24.
The Olympics on Monaco 24.
Welcome back to the very special Olympics series of Midori House. One of the attractions here on site at the House of Switzerland is an old Swiss postal bus, which has been functioning for the last 2 weeks as a pop-up music radio station.
The old stallion made the road trip to London by driving across Europe from Zurich, picking up a few musicians and hosts along the way. They're now here to broadcasting Swiss, French, German and UK DJs to listeners online and on DAB 7 days a week.
But not Romanche, that's just wrong. It's the brainchild of the International Radio Festival, now a world-renowned event which takes place in Zurich every September to celebrate the best music radio from around the world. Our very own Kate Bilbao hopped on board the bus where she met Daryl von Dakenen, director of the festival.
You are listening to the International Radio Festival. We're live from the House of Switzerland in London town.
You're listening to the International Radio Festival in London.
The International Radio Festival celebrates the most consumed medium in the world, and that's music radio. And what we do is we bring about 30 radios together once a year, and they come and air and showcase their music radio program to their peers, and live across FM around Zurich, that's where it takes place, online of course, and most of the radios broadcast live back home.
And what's brought you to London and to the Olympics? How come you've set up this station during the 2012 Games?
We caught the attention of the Swiss government, who have a particular department that organises all the expos. It's called Presence Switzerland. And they were building a little village during the Olympics here, and they were looking to showcase the best of Swiss, and we're a Swiss product, pretty unique. We're the only radio festival in the world, in the whole history of radio. So they brought us along, and here we are with the Acoustic Flame of Switzerland in London, across London, the world's largest DAB market.
And so can you just describe what your setup looks like? Because this isn't just any ordinary looking radio station, is it?
Well, no, we've actually converted a Swiss postal bus from the 50s into a rolling studio bus, fully equipped with all the radio equipment, and we've got guests throughout the day for the next 3 weeks, certainly until the 12th of August. And we're broadcasting, like I said, on a temporary DAB license, the first of its kind, actually.
Thank you to all the listeners for being with us here in this International Radio Festival. We are very happy to be here in this beautiful bus with this beautiful day here in London.
Broadcasting live from the House of Switzerland.
We are International Radio Festival broadcasting live on DAB across London.
Our focus here is really to kind of bridge British and Swiss culture, enhance the nation's friendship, and so our focus is on Anglo-Swiss music, contemporary Swiss music. So we've got a whole mixture between the best of Swiss and the best of the UK. You probably know less of the names in Switzerland, but there's like Shakedown, Olli Stumm, for example, Drum Poet. They're pretty well known in the electronic music scene. But from the UK, we had Norman Jay, we've had Derek May, although he's an American. We had Eddie Piller, founder of Acid Jazz Records, who discovered Jamiroquai, S Express, Brand New Heavies. We're expecting Toddler T today, funny enough, big Radio 1 name. We've got Kissy coming. Good Lord, we've got all sorts of people coming. I can't even remember all of them.
And we're down here on the banks, kind of the River Thames. We're in the shadow of the Shard, and this is where Switzerland have set up their House of Switzerland. Have you had any kind of surprise guests, any politicians or any athletes kind of popping in to see you as well?
Oh my God. The red carpet's been worn out. We've had to buy a new one, actually. yesterday we had Sepp Blatter, boss of FIFA. The day before we had, and we had Anton Mosiman as well, cook to the Queen. We've had one of the federal councillors. You know, Switzerland has six presidents. We've had one of them here. We had the mayor of Zurich. I think that's pretty good going, isn't it?
And what are they making of your little setup here? What do they think of the bus?
They're loving it. Everybody loves a bus. I think it awakes a child in you, seeing a roaning bus that's kind of travelling around.
Here's some more Swiss music for you. Swiss music, 100% until 11 a.m. here on Swiss Pop-Up Radio with the International Radio Festival, broadcasting live from the House of Switzerland, London Bridge.
I'm Laura Leishman. I'm doing 9 to 11 here on our Swiss Pop-Up Radio bus, the International Radio Festival, here at the House of Switzerland.
And tell us a bit about your show. What can people expect from it? What kind of music are you playing?
I'm playing entirely Swiss music, which I think people have certain, you know, ideas about that involve alpenhorn and accordions and yodeling, which is not the case at all. What I'm playing is a lot of rap, hip-hop, a lot of reggae, actually, coming out of Switzerland. A lot of people with mixed backgrounds, Swiss, Caribbean. And then right now, for instance, we're playing something by the Low Fat Orchestra, which are actually a sort of punk new wave band. So a big mix of Swiss music and just saying what's coming up during the day here at the House of Switzerland on the radio.
And how did you get involved in this project? Who invited you to come aboard?
Well, I knew the International Radio Festival guys, Daryl and Miguel, because I went last year in Zurich to the festival. So I knew them that way. And another guy working here, Samuel, with a Swiss website called MX3, which promotes Swiss music. I knew him from the public broadcaster in Switzerland. And that's how I got involved. They sent me an email. I went, yeah.
And what do you make of the bus? Did you know about the bus in advance?
They did say it was going to be a bus, I think, but that was just an extra bonus. I think the bus is amazing. I can't believe they actually drove this throughout all of Switzerland and then got it here. That I find incredible. I thought there might be two buses, just like a replica, one in Switzerland, one here, but this is the actual bus. I can't believe someone actually drove this thing from Switzerland right here to London Bridge. I find that pretty incredible.
So this is kind of the culmination of a massive road trip, I guess.
It is. It's the culmination of a massive road trip, a massive musical road trip, because the bus recorded a bunch of Swiss bands throughout Switzerland and brought the bus here, and now we're playing that music. It's kind of a crazy idea, but, you know, it happened. And I love the fact that we can see the mountains in the back of the bus. There's a nice mural of mountains there. We had a guy playing alpenhorn here in the bus yesterday. It took up half the bus, but people like coming in. We've had even our president, the head of state, basically, of Switzerland, in this radio bus, in this crazy radio bus, playing some music.
And have you had much of a chance to interact with the other presenters and the other DJs? Have you met many of them?
Oh, yeah. I hang out here all day. I actually do. I never go home. I sometimes sleep on the couch in the back of the bus for about half an hour. And then I hang out all day. I saw Normski last night, for instance, in the bus. And then after his show at the House of Switzerland. And I've talked with Gabby about her guests. And Samuel I see every day. And Chris as well. I presented on the stage with him a couple days ago. Yeah, I get to see everybody. It's pretty cool.
Thank you very much, Brian.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And thank you very much to you.
Yeah, thank you very much to you too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Ciao.
There we are. A little bit of Swiss radio on a bus. Can't say no to that, can you? That's everything now for this show. It's the end. Thanks to everyone here at the House of Switzerland for providing us with such good company, good food, and even good weather. It hasn't rained at all.
No, I'm just noticing Adrian Craddock has come in close for the food on this table. One of our researchers, he's very keen on the food, it seems. Anyway, it's the grand finale of our Olympic specials tomorrow, and we'll be heading to Casa Brazil at London's Somerset House to look forward to Rio 2016. And stay tuned, because up next, after the news, it's the latest edition of a rather wonderful show called The Urbanist.
But from all of us here at the House of Switzerland, I'm Steve Bloomfield.
And I'm Andrew Tuck.
Goodbye.